You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and I am here with the legend, Penny Rimbeau, and his great collaborator, Peter Vukmirovich Stevens. We're going to kick this off with a track from the new collaboration. This is a I guess we'll call it poetry with music, called Of Summer's Passing. It's real cool. It's out now on the subsidiary of one little indie called Caliban Sounds. I dig it a lot. Let's play it, and we'll be right back.
Held in thrall, yet curled about the trajectory. Today the swallows will depart to reclaim their Nile. But now, still early, they circle on warm thermals in memory of summer's joy, awaiting the compulsive drive. The storm sphinx also awaits, smiling, feline, in the sands. Listen, the falcon, the buzzard, the hunting birds, beware. Listen then, the distant call of unspoken warnings, the whisper. There is France, mist-cloaked and argumentative. There are ice-wrapped Alps, toothy old Dolomites. There is ancient Italy, umber brown, sensuous, sleeping. There are gorgeous seas, yet always the hunters. See the shadow and see yourself in flight. Yet know also the talons, know the strike. And still the swallows drift, awaiting the call. Within the conspiracy of doubt, we are the mechanic, bruised, oily and blackened with false desire. This is not the passion, nor even its mirror. Did not Michelangelo work in stone and learn the hardness of it? Or Giacometti pinch at clay to reenact the creation? Oh, you strange masters, you conspiracy! Should I reach out that we might touch hand to hand? Or swirl against you in divine flight? What is your demand? The smithy strikes out at the setting sun and declares night fallen. Yet I know this as a declaration of a dream, that there I too might celebrate those darker depths and hear compulsion's call. Like the swallows, I wait.
And we are back. Penny, thanks for coming on the show. I've talked to you a few times before, so it's always a real honor and a pleasure to have you on the show and get to talk to you. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
And Peter, we've never met before, but thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm sure we're going to have an interesting conversation today.
It's great to be here.
So as I was saying, they both have a new collaborative record out. I really, really dig it. Penny's been doing poetry for a long time. Peter's been doing, are you classical or avant classical? Or Peter, how would you define what you do?
I got to say that I don't know where I fit in anything. That's the thing, is that I sort of have this, after all this time, I sort of found myself in this place and I don't really know what to call it. I did, under the threat of my father's wrath, began piano when I was a kid, and that kind of got me started. And then when I was sitting there during my lessons, I didn't want to practice what I was doing, so I would just invent my own stuff. And I never really knew that what I was doing was composing. It was just an instinct, anyways, over time and through various influences that brought me to where I am, I sort of developed my own language and my own way of putting music together. And, you know, there's really not a good term for it. And I think that's probably to my benefit that I don't really know how to describe it. So I did go to conservatory. I did my studies with a number of great teachers. But finding my own voice was just what I needed to do. And so I leave it up to people how they wanted to find the music.
Actually, Peter brings up a great point. Penny, I don't know this fact about you. I'm sure you've addressed it somewhere. I know you've been doing music at least since Exit. When did you start playing music, and was it enjoyable when you first started playing music?
I don't think of it. I don't sort of see it as playing music, actually. It's just sort of, if you like, you know, playing, for want of a better word, the soul, you know. I mean, it's music is just there in everything, isn't it? And it's just a matter of letting it be itself and come out. That's why I really enjoy, you know, improvisational work. It's just happening, and it can only happen that way at that moment. And so I tend to work on that frame, you know. I don't really consider music. Music happens, you know. It's life, isn't it? It's real life, and it's the real dialogue as well. I mean, the sounds of the day are the real dialogue. What you put on it is just, you know, philosophical or convenience or whatever it is we do to what's happening is really, what I do to what's happening is really rather irrelevant to me. I mean, I'm interested in what's happening, not what I think about what's happening. There's a slight mirror there in what Peter was saying, you know, stuff goes on and we're a part of that stuff. And to try and define it is to actually confine it. The moment something becomes an ism of some form, then it's sort of beginning to get compressed. And, you know, I sort of make every effort to live my life free of those sort of definitions, because that way, you know, I'm not limiting whatever it is that I might be.
Penny with the deep answer as always. But actually, Penny, you talked about how you can't define music or that's just a part of existence or being or whatever. Along those lines, on the I wrote, I didn't get the title of the record. The record's called Silence or Silence Without an I. I really, really, really liked your delivery and how you really verbalized and pinched and blew up each word. I hope you take this as a compliment. While listening to it, I was reminded of Boris Karloff on the Grinch Who Stole Christmas, where when he talks, he really bends the words and, you know, accentuates each word. And I really loved how you did that on the new record. And so my question is, I've gone to poetry sometimes, and sometimes just the person reading it or whatever. And is how you say the word as important as the word itself?
Everything I write comes out of silence, obviously. You know, I don't sort of sit down and write trying to make ideas happen, because, you know, they don't happen that way. So they come from silence. And I guess I try not to interfere with that silence. You know, once the word has arrived, you know, it only has one way of being said at any given time. And again, you know, and I don't make any effort to think, how should I do this or how shouldn't I do it? I just do it, and it determines. I mean, it was a very strange thing to record with absolutely no backdrop. You know, I mean, I recorded it in the studio on my own, you know, with the engineer, and actually Eve came along to sort of lend moral support or criticism or whatever she wanted to do. But again, it's a bit in the rather in the framework of, you know, what I was saying before. It simply happens, and the words will happen in the way they need to happen. I'm not really conscious of the words. I'm conscious of what the words are, if you understand what I mean. You know, something which is something much deeper than simply, ooh, how, you know, a tree can have so many expressions. And what happens is, not trying to determine how I should do it, then the doingness itself determines, and therefore that gives a depth, I think. You know, I can't recognize it particularly or not, but in other words, the feeling is, I mean, every word we use is a sort of feeling. It isn't a tree isn't a tree, it's a feeling. So the word of it isn't even a word, it's a feeling, you know. So everything comes from that source, you know, and the closer I can be to that source, the closer I know I'm existing, rather than, you know, living a sort of defined form of life. So it's a bit complex, but words write themselves. You know, and my voice selfs itself, you know. I mean, I can't sort of, it just happens, doesn't it?
Penny talks about just letting the words happen. On your end, when you were adding the piano accompaniment, how random or how planned out was what you contributed to the record?
Well, I kind of in the same vein as what Penny's saying, you know, everything you undertake, you get kind of a certain, you have to get a flow and take in, you know, the information. And then you have to, you never force anything. You just sit and listen. And then you sit at the piano. I got my paper sitting there. Have my coffee next to me, and you just let the first thing happen. And after all this time and after all of my work and music, basically anything that I begin with at this point will eventually turn into something that I can use. Now, some stuff really hits it out of the park. Some stuff I got to rework. Some stuff takes forever. Sometimes I got to throw some things away, but not too often. But usually there'll be something I can recycle. So the way this went about, so first of all, it's a really unique project for me to actually have an entire pre-recorded text spoken. And what made it easy, and I didn't even think would have been an issue in the beginning, would have been how well the poetry was delivered by Penny, because it was. And that made it easier. And I suppose the musical aspect of it is just the frequency range of Penny's voice, right? And so I can sort of pick a part of the piano and I can say, well, his voice is almost sort of like within this range of the instrument. And then from that point, start to work and stay out of his way so that the notes are not interfering with his, you know, not trying to get too confused with where his range is. So that's a thing I took into mind, but I didn't do that too consciously. That was just sort of happens instinctively. So I had the texts and in front of me written, and you look at them, and poetry and music, they're both time-based arts, so they both take a certain amount of time to realize what the idea is. And so I did block out aspects of the poetry where things are repeating, where there's themes that come back. And in music, repetition is extremely important. And one of the beautiful things about repetition is that in music, there's no such thing as an exact repetition. So if you hear something once and then you hear it repeated again down the way, it's a repetition, but it's in context of the previous repetition. And that's one of the rich things in music, especially in music that is sort of, you know, multi-layered that we did. So you want to make sure that that's happening, and that the structure of the music is sort of loosely aligned with the poetry. So at some points they actually are kind of moving in tandem and parallel. And then there has to be points where they're completely separated from each other and they go their own way. And I think you do that to make a white canvas, if you will, to give a big plane of Penny's ideas and then my ideas that go with it. One person has said that my music is always telling its own story, and it does. I have something to say in my work. I think I don't view myself, the word composer is for me a word, I don't understand it. It sounds like somebody who's just an organizer. I consider myself just basically a writer, and I just happen to write with music. And so from that viewpoint, making a structure to kind of go with the context of the words, I put it together to complement and keep a distance, and not think about it too much, but just let it happen. And at the end, to make sure that Penny and I were sort of seeing things in a way that we both liked, as a collaboration, I recorded all these works in my studio and then mixed them with his voice. So we have all these sort of pre-recorded, pre-release things that we listened to as drafts. And we went back and forth like this for a while listening. And Penny never really said a lot, other than he just thought, well, this sounds nice and, it's great, and he just let me go the way I wanted to go with it. Took a few months. I finally got some stuff. And then the other thing that was tricky, actually even trickier to put this together, because we have the 8 poems, is to write 3 solo works. So that book ended and put one in the middle. And that was the harder part, because I had been so accustomed to having this template with which to, there's going to be a certain time duration based on the poem, right? You're not going to recite a 4-minute poem and I'm going to write 12 minutes of music. So when I have the solo stuff, then I have to really think, okay, how long do I want this to be? How do I want the arc to go? And so I wrote the poems, the music that accompanied the poems first. And then I had to sit back and think, okay, how's the arc on this going to go? And one of the things that I don't know if it happens just from being too deeply ingrained into a certain process, but I didn't like the way the arc flowed in some of my music with the pieces. So I actually had to rewrite one of them, because the music should have to be written. The music should sound like the cut out paper dolls, they're all their arms are chained together and their feet are chained together. And it has to feel like that. It has to look like you cut it and then you unfolded it and you had this series of stuff that's all connected throughout. And that is done through music that is, with varying degrees of presence. And I think that some stuff has to really sit in the back and just not be very present and just sort of have this sort of accompanying role. And then sometimes you have to have it where it's really forceful and upfront. And that's part of the arc that we tried to bring into the music. And, as I send it to Penn, we both thought it sounded okay.
Yeah, well, I love how Penny's voice, like I said, Penny really shapes and twists his voice around. And I love how you add the contrasting, kind of ominous, sometimes sad, sometimes happy musical backing. I think it works really well together. Penny, along those lines, with the crass reissues, from my perspective, you were very hands-on and very detailed about how you wanted things to go. And if you ask me, the crass reissues are probably the best reissues ever done. I think you did an exceptional job. What's it like with these recordings where you're kind of less hands-on and other people or other person or Peter is kind of adapting it to what he thinks it should do? What's it like to totally let go or not totally or partially let go of your artistic contribution and let someone else work around with it?
Well, it's a privilege. I'm not interested in what I can do with stuff if someone else can do it. I mean, I think that this particular project, it was a lovely, I mean, effectively, we did it apart from each other. But it was essential that we were a part of each other in doing it, you know, and that comes naturally. I mean, you can't fabricate love. It either exists or it doesn't exist. I think it does exist in everything if we can only find it. But, you know, to work with someone in this way was glorious, really. I mean, I had complete trust and complete faith that we'll have a result. I hadn't got a clue what the result would be. It was very strange going into studio effectively on my own and just doing the poems. I mean, I don't read, well, I do read my poems, and when I finish writing something, I normally do it, speak it, because then I can see the flow of it better or hear the flow of it better. But I hadn't got a clue really what Peter might come up with. It certainly wasn't for me to start saying, couldn't you this or couldn't you that? You know, I mean, that wouldn't have been the point. The point was we're two people apart from each other, yet deeply ingrained with each other, you know, which is how it is. I mean, that's, you know, the moment you start telling someone what they ought to be wearing, you might just as well, you know, go to sleep, you know. I mean, it's sort of, it's what we should do with each other. That's how we are, you know. We've each got something beautiful to offer. And to allow people to offer it with no imposition is how it should be, you know. It's all this sort of grabbingness that so destroys everything about our coexistence. I mean, coexistence isn't coexistence if we're sullying it with definition and demand and condition. I mean, conditional love. Absolute oxymoron. I mean, love is by nature unconditional. It cannot be conditioned, you know. So the whole idea of a conditional love is just an obscenity. Well, you know that. So, I mean, all of the players I work with, I never, you know, whatever I'm performing, you know, with sometimes quite large bands, I'll never say to anyone, "Well, I want you to," or "I think you ought to," or "could you this," or "could you," I mean, that's not the issue. I never discuss what I'm going to do or what we're going to do together with the band. If I turn up for a gig, you know, I won't have seen some of the people for, you know, months. And we don't discuss it. We just get on with it. Generally speaking, we don't talk about it too much afterwards. It's happened, we've done it, you know. I mean, you don't, it's a bit like sort of making love and then spending a few hours afterwards talking about how you did it. Well, I mean, you you just did it and move on. It was a real joy, you know, not working on this album, if you understand what I mean.
well put. According to the material sent out with this album, and my own, I guess, interpretation as well, according to the materials, is anti-militarism is something that I guess is a part of all your work or a lot of your work, but this release as well. I guess my question is, since Exit, or maybe even since before Exit, do you think the world's in a better place or a worse place? Or maybe that's not maybe that question doesn't even make sense within the Penny worldview or Galactic view, Penny.
Well, without being glib, I mean, it's in the same place.
Yeah.
you know, and it's the same place is where we place it, you know. I mean, the world is what we make it. How it is how we make it, you know, and we can be complicit in it or we can be not complicit in it. You know, this is the situation. It's the only way it could be. And it's always the only way it could be. There never is a time which isn't the only way it could be. And it will continue to be the only way it could be. You know, we don't contribute to it. We are it. And if we know we are it, then perhaps we're functioning better on a sort of particle level than we might be if we're trying to, again, you know, define it and say, well, I want it that way or I want it this way. Well, it's the way it is, and it's pretty intelligent move to accept that, because you're not going to change it. You cannot change how it is now. Things change, but, you know, that's your problem, you know, not yours, you know. That's a problem if you want to make it into a problem. I don't see it as a problem, actually. I see it as just what's happening. Whatever it is, well, I might find things gross, but that's what's happening, you know, and that will, you know, find a chord within me, you know, and that's probably why a lot of my work is, you know, massively opposed to militarism or capitalism or all the sort of, you know, these fundamentals which want to burrow into our souls. I mean, to live life free of deliberation is, that true liberation is being free of deliberation, if you understand what I mean.
Well, actually, I'm glad you ended with that, because Peter, I love talking to Penny. I love Penny's work. And whenever I talk to Penny, I'll be like, so Penny, how's it going? And then Penny will have this massive philosophical response. How it going? You know, it's always going. You know what I'm saying? So Peter, are you at Penny's level or are you at my level where I'm looking up to Penny and struggling to follow along as a schoolboy, because Penny always has this, you know, really thought out, really deep and complex worldview. What's it like for you to work with Penny? Is it easy, or do you have to step back and say, oh, I have to watch what I say because I don't want to offend Penny or say something that goes against?
I don't worry about offending anybody. But I like working with Penny a lot. And, you know, we spent a little time together and we had a lot of time to talk. And in ways, I mean, we're, of course, you know, we have our own trip, but we also have some things in common and we have a similar worldview in ways than we talked about. Penny is pretty deep into painting. I mean, he really understands a lot about the movements of painters in the last couple of centuries. And that was actually a really interesting way to get to kind of understand our worldview, because we like some similar things, we dislike some similar things. As far as that goes about, you know, so working with Penny was fantastic. It was a tripping experience, and I think the project worked as well as it did because we kind of do understand each other. You know, I think you know where I'm coming from. I mean, it's of course impossible to be understood by anybody, but completely. But that's okay. You know, and what Penny says, you know, you do your thing in life. Well, that's true. I mean, you're born in a certain period of time. You have your agency within that time period that you're existing. And one of the nice things to be able to do, if you've cultivated the time to do it, is to be able to make music or paint or whatever it is, because it's your ability to act in the present. And so I think Penny and I kind of overlap in that particular philosophical view that you just have to act on with your being. So I bring that to the table. And so I think that's probably, you know, where we see eye to eye as far as how we do things.
Fair enough. Just a couple last questions for you guys. Peter, what's your background with Penny? Have you been a fan of him a long time? Is he just somebody that you just met, you know, very recently? What's your background with Penny?
Well, I was born in Arizona. And I was born in, if you've been to Arizona, you realize, you think, wow, you live in a country with every possible resource imaginable, and this is all you could come up with. So I was born in a rather banal environment. And so when I was about 13, I was raised in a household where we listened to, Bach's Brandenburg Concerto and, and stuff. Because my father was a rather serious gentleman. But I wanted to follow my own path. And so I started to listen to music and discovered a lot of different music, got into noise and experimental music and, punk rock and listened. So I, became aware of the music of Crass for sure. I knew some of the music that when I was listening to it as I was growing up. And I think as you listen to that music, you realize you're listening to something that is not just gonna kind of be here for a moment and then disappear into obscurity. You realize you're listening to something that just for some reason goes deeper. And I think a lot of people have that experience with Penny's music and Crass. And I think that I remembered, what the album sounded like. And I think I remembered also the spirit, because I think the spirit really comes through the music. And I think that's really the important thing about what Penny and Crass did, is that they created spirit. They shared an idea of what a person can do. And that's a really important, extremely important lesson, because in the schooling system that we're forced into in this world, nobody ever asks you what you want. Nobody ever asks you, why don't you just take some time and think about what's good for you and discover what's inside yourself and go after that. Like, go look for it. You're going to go a whole lot along wrong directions, but do that, because you may find something really valuable, and something really valuable. But that's in a world where we're all bred to work and to work and serve our corporate masters. We don't have that. So I think when you do find somebody that is presenting that perspective, especially to young, minds that are forming, it's extremely important. And then, if you follow that track and you follow the certain culture after that, you end up discovering the music. Like, for example, for me, I began to know that I wanted to compose as a teenager when I began listening to the music of Erik Satie. And Erik Satie is a fantastic composer, and his music also is projecting this very same thing. He's like, look, just go inside your own head, spend some time there, look around and find something in there that is, it's yours, but it's also, you don't know how some things show up in your head, why you are the way you are, and you don't question it too much, but you got to go look for that stuff, because there's some good things in there. And everybody's got it. And so then you go into Satie, and then you go deeper and deeper into culture. And then you realize that culture is where the magic is. It's where the real life can be explored in an infinite way. You can live for 1,000 years and you'll never max out all the things that you're going to learn and that you can discover and that you can generate on your own. And as a pianist, I got into the music of lots of other composers. One of my favorite composers, he's not very well known, his name is Martin New. And Martin New, I heard Martin New's music and I said, well, that was a guy. I totally like the way this guy sounds. And he sounded the way I did. I mean, I thought we had a really similar language. There's a French composer named Oliver Messiaen, who's an absolute fantastic. So, this going from punk music and, experimental music and noise that some people do extremely well. And then you go into the world where people, because nobody's making this stuff because they want to have a hit record. They're making this stuff because they have something to say. And it's the same thing in the world of, for lack of a better term, this contemporary music, because classical is a terrible term for what we do. It's classical is from the, it's from long, long ago. So we're in this whatever era. And these are people that have gone deeply into their trip and have developed the skills to be able to express themselves in an idiom that we all sort of agree on listening to in the same way. And so to me, the music of Crass and other music that's of that same perspective, and the music that is related to more, whatever you want to call it, concert music, there's a huge overlap there. And I think for me, stitching those two worlds together, because I can, is my contribution.
Well said. Last question for either of you, or one of you, or both of you, whoever you want to answer. What do you hope the listeners, if anything, what do you want them to take from Silence?
I think Peter really sort of defined the whole thing really brilliantly there, especially the sort of emphasis on culture. I mean, I don't have a great deal of time for the material world, but, you know, there are things within the material world, and they come under the heading of, you know, what Peter describes as culture, which are valuable and wonderful and celebrations, you know, to listen to, you know, Schubert trio or something like that, actually is such a confirmation of life. And life free of, you know, the sort of absurdities, because they're not horrors, actually, they're absurdities, they're banalities, as Arendt said. And to be caught by those banalities at the cost of culture, it is culture that we return to endlessly when we need confirmation of some form or other. That's because that's what it gives, that something is possible. You know, Messiah that Peter mentioned. I mean, he wrote a quartet when he was in concentration camp, and it's one of the most profound, beautiful pieces of music that probably exists. And it was made in impossible circumstances. Yet the heart is greater and bigger than anything. All of the destructiveness, all of the evil, if you like, all, I don't really believe in the word evil, but all of the horror is diluted to the degree that it's insignificant. And it is insignificant. What's happening in the world today in terms of sort of wars and horrors and compounding people, all the stuff that's going on is meaningless against our art, you know, our culture, our words and our music and our paintings, which actually speak of what life really is. And that's the same sound as the blackbirds that's singing out there, or the trees that are dropping leaves out there. And we forget that so easily, or it is forgotten so easily. But it is really, that is the expression of life. I mean, if life has a meaning, then its meaning is there, in the absurdity of our art, in the wonder of our art, and glory of our art. And Peter's thing of saying, look in yourself, everyone's got that in them. Everyone has got that. There's no great anyone's, because we're all great somethings. We just need to look and find it. And it can be utterly insignificant. It can be someone painting a little piece of sand red rather than yellow. That's beauty. It's our ability to be mad and awkward and crazy, and allowing those things, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, well, do it then, do it. You know, break all those containments, break the chains. You know, they're only ideas. That we chain ourselves with ideas. We can break them.
Well said. I hope the listeners were listening closely, because Penny, as he always does, drops extremely interesting kernels of truth just in conversation. One thing that he said is, if life has a meaning, it's in the absurdity of our art. And he said, everything is great in something. And Penny, always a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for taking time out of your day to speak with me. I really, really do appreciate it. Peter, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on the show. Great to talk to you. And the listeners definitely should check out Silence. I love Penny's delivery. As always, I love Penny's words, but I really do love how Penny expresses and shapes the words. And I love how Peter adds the backing that is really tasteful, intense, ominous and dark, but sometimes happy too. And I really think you guys, both of you, have collaborated to make something really interesting and really profound, if you will. So thanks again for coming on. And I really appreciate it, fellas. And best of luck to you in the rest of the year and next year as well.
Great well, to be thank here. You. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. And nice to see Peter as well.
All right. It is done in entertainment. Take it as entertainment. So please don't take it any other way.
I fucking don't!